Lou? Yep. All right. I think I'm going to pretty much start then. It's about 2:50, is that right? The starting time?
Yep.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's what I heard. All right. So, I'm going to be talking about basically how to start packaging stuff for Debian or Debian-related distributions. It's actually quite easy, but before we start, I'd just like to get a rough idea. Who here has done a Debian package at some point in time? Who has successfully built a Debian package? Who's tried and given up because it was too hard? All right, there's a few of you. Just so I know, is there anyone here who's a Debian developer or Ubuntu maintainer or similar? Just you two? Okay. Sir? Fellow maintainer. Okay, so there's three of you going to be heckling him. So, who am I? Well, my name is Pascal. I've been a Debian developer for a while now, about 5 years. It's all Matt's fault over there. I blame him entirely. I went to complain once about something that Debian did that annoyed me. And he said, well, why don't you fix it then? And I never actually fixed it. I don't even remember what it was. But next thing I knew, yeah. Yeah. So, the best reason you have for listening to me is that there's never been a thread on Debian Devel entitled Serious Problem with Mr. Hakim. When you get your own thread on Debian Devel telling the world about how bad you are, then you know that either you have a problem or you're doing things really well. But it's better to, you know, avoid extremes and stay in the middle. So, why would we... Yes? Yep. If I do it more, it's going to stop. Well, if I actually knew how this software works, I would maybe agree with you, but seeing as it's the first time I use it, I'm not willing to stretch it quite that far. So why would you actually create a dev file? Well, I've got a few reasons here. You know, obviously to start with, to upload to your distribution, whether it's Debian or Ubuntu or Debian EDU or any of the other large distributions out there that use dev files. Another good reason that people have is creating your own custom distribution. Basically, a lot of people do end up at some point in time basing their work on Debian and doing something extra on top. This seems to especially apply to people who use Debian in their workplace. They have a few bits of software that have been developed in-house, and they need those to be deployed out to all their machines. I think quite a few people actually start doing it that way just to make their lives easier, and then go on to do normal Debian packages as well. If you're a software maintainer, it'll actually make it easier for people to install your own software. If you write a new fancy bit of open source software that does something, you might decide that providing a .deb file will make it easier for people to install it. Making the installation of custom slash local software easier. Who's ever downloaded a tarball from somewhere, ran configure, make install, then gone, oh shit. Yeah. Did I really want that? Can I remove it? This is where it can be useful. By creating your own package, you're using the Debian tools that are used to track what's getting installed, where did it get installed, when did it get installed, what were the MD5 hash sums at the time of installation, so when something really strange happened and there's a few new accounts on your machine. And finally, the example that we had yesterday from Andrew McMillan was, hey, create a package with all your main admins in there and install that to all your machines, and then you'll be able to have everyone installed on all machines with their own preferences. When someone leaves, pull them out of the package, upgrade everything, bam, the user's gone. So, what is actually a .dev package? Well, it's really just a bunch of files. It's actually quite easy. So I'm going to find one and show you exactly what I mean. You probably can't read that. Can you read that now? Where do I put it? Old. I'm sure it'll be one in there. Yeah. So, I have a package here called pflogsom, which for those of you who use physics is really cool, and I maintain it, so you should all install it. And what it does is go through your mail log files and generate some stats on what mail's getting sent out, what's around, and how many bounces you're getting, and so on. The main thing I wanted to show you was that a dev file is actually just a simple archive that you can pull apart with a program called AR, which actually exists on a whole bunch of different platforms. It's not a Debian-specific thing. So on any machine you could be, if you want to pull out a dev apart, just use R. So X is for extract. I extract it out, do NLS, and hey, I've got three files in there. First one that you probably might care about is a Debian binary that just contains some version information, 2.0. Then there's two tar gzip files that I created. One's called control and the other one is called data. The control file contains all the information you need to actually install the package and information about what the package is. The data file just contains the actual bits of code you're shipping. So if I extract this just to show you, it scrolled past, but basically, basically it's a bunch of stuff from the tree that we need. Obviously it's open source software, so there'll be lots of doc. Right? The actual program itself, right here, and the man page. Why is the man page in there twice? Ah, yeah, well, it's my second. New file bug. That's due to something I did once, which is that I renamed the package. Throw the program in there. Anyway, we've also got user as bin, and the actual, you can't see on a timer screen, can you? And the actual program itself there. So that was all in data.tar.gz. And then the other one we have is control. Control will have more files most of the time, as soon as you're doing anything a little more complicated. But in this case, we have md5sum, which will always be there. md5sums will contain the hash sums of everything you've installed in that package. So that's pretty easy. And what was the other one? Control. Control contains some basic information on what it actually was. So the package name, the version, the section, so, you know, who's it for, so that in your package control system, you can see whatever is, what category stuff, yes?
Does reading dev change that much?
As far as I'm aware, it's still mostly vaporware.
Okay.
Wigan Pen is something that was done at the Wigan Pen pub in Canberra at LCA. 2005, which was about taking the dev package format a step further. They were looking at using bzip2 rather than gzip and that kind of thing. Unfortunately, dpackage, which is a program you use to install packages, has this effect that it actually sucks the brains of the maintainer out and splits them out over the audience, which means that people work on it for 6 months and then go, actually, I'm just going to quit Debian instead. Which tends to happen quite often. Priority will tell us whether it's something that, you know, should be installed, might be nice to get installed, or will conflict with something else that has to be installed. So, you know, you really want to be careful about installing it. The architecture line will tell us what can you actually install this package on. In this case, it's all. It's just a Perl script, so it'll run on anything. It's not architecture dependent. Obviously, if it was a binary of some kind, it'd be dependent on the architecture you're on. Yeah, there's some other miscellaneous stuff. What does it depend on? How big is it? Who's the maintainer? What's the package about? So, a quick description. That's pretty much what a Debian package has inside it. So, as you can see, it's actually pretty simple. There's not much to it. Now, obviously, normal people don't assemble packages by, you know, sticking together two star files and archiving them all into one. There are some tools we use to create them. And I've just talked through all that. Okay, so how do we actually create a package? Well, I'm going to start with a very simple script that I wrote earlier, and I'm going to package it. To actually start creating a package, the easiest thing you can do is use a program called DHMake. DHMake will basically do everything you need to do and provide you stubs of things you need to fill out once you've done that. So, let's go and look for Dev Helper. It's a set of tools that help you create. There's zillions of tools that have been created, so you have a lot of DHDs, DHDAR. I think it may actually be in its own package. The other tool? DHMake. So, I've created this bit of software. Right? Check dev, do we have Phantom? Do we not? Now, obviously, this is just a stupid script that I created so we can test this. Now, DHMake will actually want things to be in a tar format. Sorry, no. Tar gzip format. This means that if you are packaging really simple scripts, there are ways around it, but really you'll just drive yourself insane. The easiest thing you can do is create a directory. Stick your bit of code in there. And then I'll create my package. Right, so now I have the tar.gzip file. This is the bit of code we've received from, we've downloaded off the web somewhere that we want to package, or something that's been created, inside your company that you've built yourself. And we'll just go into the parent directory itself. And from there, our magic command. Yep. It's not important, but it will make the package have that number. There are some ways that, well, some complicated version numbers may create difficulties in how things are done, especially if you have too many dashes in there. It's possible to confuse the tools, but most of the time, it should be okay. Now, obviously, there's no bugs in there, so I released this version 1.0. So I'll call DHMake, and it's going to ask me a few questions. First one is, what sort of package is it? Single binary, it means that we have one package that's generated out of this tar archive. Multiple binary you would use when you want to create different packages out of one archive. Cases where you normally do this is, for example, games. Games will tend to have a fair amount of images, music files, maybe video files if you're lucky, that are the same across every single architecture. A JPEG doesn't change whether you install it on, your Mac or your an i386 machine. So what people tend to do with large collections of files like that is put them into their own separate package, built out of the same source, so that the same version of the images can be shared across a range of different packages. Other examples you may have for creating a multiple binary package are when you have different dependencies. For example, if you have a program that has a MySQL and a Postgres backend, it's considered nice to split them up into two different binaries, so two different binary packages, so that you don't have to install all the Postgres and all the MySQL bindings for your app that you install. Library means you're installing a library package, so So, you know, libpng, that kind of thing that's used for other things. Kernel module is obviously used for kernel modules. CDBS is evil and scary, so I'm not going to talk about it for now. Realistically, if you're present at this talk, you most probably only want to do single binary for most of what you're doing for now. As time goes on and you get more experience, sure, start doing multiple binaries, and then, if you're careful, libraries as well. But there's more ways to, you know, to break things. If you're creating packages for yourself, really, single binary will be fine. So I'll select S. Also, I've only got one file in there, so it's not going to stretch much. Okay, it's going to ask you some questions. Is that all good? Yes. I'll hit Enter. It's complaining about the lack of meg file. That's not a problem. I can deal with that later. So, if you have a look, it's created a whole bunch of files. Most of these are stub files that we need to fill some information in so that the tools know what to do with it and what to actually do with the package. Now, I'm going to start by deleting the Emacs and bits. They are used only when you're creating a Emacs mode, I think, or Emacs specific bit of code. So if you're packaging an Emacs module, you would need those. I don't use Emacs, so I've never done it. I think the problem is more that the person who read DHMake is a Emacs fan rather than anything else. That's a good point. I really don't know. Good point. The first file we're going to look at is the changelog. Changelog is actually quite easy. If you're making a package for Debian or Ubuntu, you'll actually need to stick some interesting stuff in here. I don't remember how Ubuntu does it, but in Debian, there is bits of software that will catch the close, column, hash, number, 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 and it's used to automatically tag bugs in the bug control system that we use, so in the bug tracking system, so that when you upload a package, it knows, hey, it closes this bug.
Is that the whole format, like the whole break close?
You can change it around some. It's only in the this is supposed to be a Debian specific change log. Yeah, it's quite normal to have an upstream change log, which is what the person who wrote the original software using. Yeah, that's right. You would have things in there like packaging a new version of whatever software it is, or fixing bugs that someone's noticed, that kind of thing. We've got some basic things in there. The version number, as you can tell, it added a -1. That means it's the first Debian revision. We had a thing this morning that said Debian miniconf -6.1, which for those of you not in the know, mean that the package was NMU'd, which is it was uploaded by someone who wasn't the maintainer. John hadn't been around, so I took it over. That's right. Unstable means who we're targeting the package to. If you're making your own packages, so installing on your own systems, this doesn't really matter a huge amount. The urgency field is used within Debian to know how long it should stay in unstable before going to testing. If you track something as, critical, it's going to spend 2 days in testing and go down to 2 days in unstable, then go pretty much straight down to testing unless there's something else wrong with it. If it's low, it's going to wait 10 days. Ideally, you upload everything as low. You only need to use high priorities when things are completely broken. So, for example, if you're the kernel maintainer and you completely broke it, people may appreciate you uploading something marked as critical so that you don't break everyone's machine. If, on the other hand, you're maintaining, you know, fortune like me and you break fortune, people can probably wait 4 or 5 days. I know it's hard, but it's doable. Now, where was I? To actually build a package, we just have to run this command. Before I actually do that, I'm going to have to modify a file called rules first. Now, there is this thought in Debian that we call this file Debian/rules, so that when you go to Google and you search for Debian rules, right, we get 1.4 million hits. Whereas, for example, right, they get less. That's why it's the rules file. Now, I'm not going to modify this. Sorry? Well, yes. Now, basically, the rules file is a make file that we call with different targets. The Debian tools that you use to build a package will call this over and over again with different rules that we need. I'm not going to go through what all of them are, because it's actually more complex than what people really need most of the time. There is a lot of flexibility here that can be useful, but that you won't need until you've been packaging for a while. And suddenly you decide that maintaining Xorg is a really good idea, at which point you need every single thing that's available. So the main concept behind building a package is that we get our Debian tools to install the package in however way we do it into a subdirectory of Debian, the Debian folder we had before. And then we package that up, and then we into our data.tar.gz, and then we add the control files with the other tools we have. So the one thing that I do have to do in this case is install to this new directory. Normally, here on the line I'm on, there's a make install that you would do normally. It changes the destination directory. So if you were using a bit of software that you can just configure, make install, most of the work would actually have been done for you. But as it is, it's just a script, so we can't do that. What I'm going to do is try and do this properly. Right. I'm going to install it to user sbin, because obviously it's a really important package. And administrators need to know whether they have their pants on or not before they turn up to work. And I've probably forgotten something, but I'm going to try it anyway. Sorry, there's a DIRS file, which contains the directories that should be created for your package to work. In our case, we'll need user sbin, so I'll leave that in. So, I go back to the root directory of my package, and I called this magic bit of code here. Now, dpackage build package will actually build the program. We have to use something called fake root as an argument to dpackage build package, because we need to fool our tools into thinking that we have root access. The reason we do this is that when we create tar files, we want the tar file to be created with root permissions. When you install a binary, for example, you want it to think that it's root. Obviously, if as a normal user you try and install that, it's not going to let you because you don't have permissions. But if a root user then installs that package, you need to have the correct permissions on there. The -uc and -us are used to tell the bits of packaging software there that I don't want to sign the package at this time. Personally, I believe you're better off not signing the package until you've done all your, you know, testing, make sure it all works, and then you can actually just sign it and upload it somewhere if that's what you're going to do. It's a good idea to sign packages with your GPG key so you know that it is actually the one you wanted to go out. I don't know about you guys, but I have to think about before I put in my GPG passphrase. So I actually normally think about what I'm doing right at that stage. If you're one of those Ubuntu people, you'll have to add a dash capital S here, because they don't let you do what we call binary upload. Debian will let you, well, Debian makes you upload actual compiled packages. Ubuntu will recompile every single package when it's uploaded. So they want just the source to be uploaded. They don't care about a compiled package. Which obviously means that in Debian, we test stuff by making sure it compiles. Ubuntu doesn't even do that. Oh, come on. So I'm going to compile this. It does a bit of stuff, and it's not happy. Yes, it wants to compile it, and it didn't tell it how to do that. Now, normally, if you're building a real package, if you're building a real package, you wouldn't just comment out everything and go, yeah, it's good enough now. Although it might be good enough if you're building your own package. Yep. You have to leave some of them in because they will, the targets will be called. So you can't call the target that doesn't exist because you'll confuse things too much. But, yeah. It's more that you need the build and the build stamp. Yeah. But I'm not creating a, you know, really clean package right now. So we'll try again, and hopefully this time it will actually work. Yep, go further. It's doing stuff. I'm obviously missing something somewhere. But it's got in there most of the way. I'm going to ignore the error for now, because otherwise I'm going to run out of time. But we have created a bunch of files. The first one is the .changes file. If you look at that, we will have a few bits of information in there. First one is, you know, we have the date. The source is the name of the source package we've uploaded. Binary is going to be the same in this case. If you have a complicated package, they'll start being different as you have different packages, binary packages being created of a single source file. Architecture tells us that it was compiled for i386, which means I should have changed architecture to all before but didn't. Version, that's the version we have. Distribution, what we're uploading this to. Urgency, before wasn't urgent. The maintainer is who is allocated as being the person responsible for this package. And change by is who actually changed the package. This is used for tracking whether a different person than the one who originally, it's used to monitor who is uploading packages and to check whether the person who is uploading a package is actually someone who's responsible for it or someone who noticed the bug and decided to get it fixed. So in Debian, there's a whole bunch of rules that are used to make sure that you don't just fix everyone else's bugs because you feel like it, and rather you try and talk with the maintainer and figure it out. Now, obviously, I didn't stick in a description before, so we don't have one. And this is the bit from our changelog before. Had I actually put in a real closed number in there, I would have matched a magic regex that's run, and there'd be an extra line in this file that says closes column and then the number of the bug, which is what's actually used to interface with the bug tracking system in Debian. We've also got some MD5 sums to make sure that when you upload the package, you can check that nothing's been modified in transit. So other bits we have are the DSC file that's used to describe the actual binary. The targz file is the original file that has been provided that we're uploading. In Debian, we always upload that one as well. Can anyone tell me why? What do you have to do with GPL? provide the source, that's right. So we don't want to get sued because we're not sharing the source that we downloaded. So here we go. The zip file contains the differences between what we actually got in the GZ file and what we used to build a package. In our case, it's basically going to be everything in the Debian directory. If you are changing the software in some way, shape, or form, the patches will start showing up in there as well. So you can track, you know, do you have everything in there that's supposed to be there and so on. And then we have the actual deb file. If you install that, then you have a new package that's installed. So is that all easy so far? You can at least nod, just so, yeah. Okay, so then we have to check our work. Now, as I said before, we try not to just ship it when it compiles and actually do some testing before. If you were there this morning at the distro summit thing, some of the people who were there actually mentioned we actually like automated tests. So if you're a software maintainer, so if you're a software developer of some sort and you have an open source package, if you have a target that you know, is present that we can use to actually test that software works, we also have that normally to kind of make sure it works at that level. What we have built does work. But then as far as the package itself is concerned, we have a few things that we want to do. The absolute bare minimum you need to do, and this is not just if you're building packages for Debian, but if you're doing them for yourself, check that it installs before you ship it out to your 1,000 machine cluster and break it all. Check that it upgrades from the previous version. So make sure that upgrades are working properly. Check that you can upgrade from the last stable version is one that's at least relevant for Debian, because most developers will be using a SID of some sort or testing. But you actually have people who track from stable to stable, and they need to make sure that when they upgrade, the version skips that they're going to have still work. And check removal as well, because there's nothing more annoying than the bit of... Yes? Yes.
It's not like it's a horrible process where you have to install stable, do an upgrade, and reinstall everything.
Right, to make all these things. Okay. And yeah, just removal, make sure it actually uninstalls. We have two tools that we can use to do some sanity checking on the package. If I run them now, it's going to complain a lot because obviously I didn't clean up the package properly. Linda is written by a guy called Stephen Kowalik, who I haven't sent at LTA this year, but is from Sydney, and is sometimes around. And LinkedIn does, well, so Linda is actually a re-implementation of LinkedIn in a way. They do similar things. I recommend you run both if you get a chance, if only because they may catch different bugs. Ideally, they'd catch exactly the same ones, but it doesn't always happen. LinkedIn has been updated more in the recent past. Sometimes it's the other way around. The last thing you should do is actually check the diff. So what I mean by that is actually pull open the diff and check to see what's in it. This means that if while you're hacking on your branch package and you decided to extract a whole copy of the source tree in there to test something, you're not going to ship everything in your diff. Okay, make sure that what's in there is what you actually want in there. Having a look, it's all basically the contents of the Debian directory in this case. Had I modified the application that we had before, it would have shown in here as well. The other great thing that's good to remove from those .diff.gz files are CVS files if you've mangled them. In fact, it's probably better to remove CVS files in general, just because they'll create a lot of things you don't need there. Okay, what's next? Native Debian packages. A native Debian package is created when you don't have a original tar file that you're using. There's very few cases where you would actually consider doing it. even if you are someone who maintains their own, you know, who's written their own bit of software, I would still recommend keeping it separate between the actual Debian part that you use and the rest of the code you wrote. You don't want to get into a situation when you have to release a whole new version of your code because you stuffed up something in the Debian directory. Because it's not going to affect, you know, Red Hat users you may have or a similar type thing. Native packages, because of their of how they're numbered in Debian, we don't have the dash that was present before, we just have a dot. We do tend to have issues when things get complicated. If a package has to be uploaded by someone else, the version string will start growing and growing and growing, and it's really bad. So avoid native packages unless you really know what you're doing and you think it's absolutely essential. As I say here, don't use a native package just because you're packaging your own bit of software that you've written. I still recommend having a separate Debian directory that you add to it. Okay, now I've shown you how to actually put things in a package, but not do any of the installation specific things that we may require. So how do we actually do that? Well, there's a bunch of scripts that you can use. They're usually called the maintainer scripts. We have pre-inst, which is run before you install. We have post-inst, that's run after you install your package. Similarly, we have pre-rm, that's run before you remove your package, and post-rm, which is run after you remove your package. It all sounds really simple. It's actually not. I have added here a link to one of the best explanations I've seen on how it all actually works. So this is what happens when you install a package. That's a simple case. You don't actually need to worry about most of this unless you're doing something complicated. In my experience, the one time where you do actually start getting into quite complicated maintainer scripts is when you have broken something in a previous version and your next version needs to fix up that break. An example of that is if you start modifying configuration files and then you realize that, hey, I just stuffed it up. Upgrading purges my configuration files. I need to start doing something clever. This is when you start breaking things all the time. Ideally, you're not going to get into that situation. Most of these maintainer scripts that you'll need to modify will be created automatically for you by the DH helper scripts that were present in the rules file. This means you don't actually have to worry about it a great amount. They're created for you, they install for you, that's all you need to care about. The one time where most people do need to take care of these scripts is if they use DevConf prompting. So if you need to talk to the user when your package installs, you would need to use DevConf so you can prompt for, you know, user input of some sort, yeah. Do you want to use the libraries for this? Do you want to do this? Do you not want to do this? And so on. There are tools to use it. I'm not going to show you guys how to use DevConf today, but it's actually not too hard if you follow the how-to that exists. As you can see, there's a whole more bunch of flowcharts that show you what's happening. Yeah, it gets simpler and simpler. Right. If you want to see what scripts you have installed, if you look in /var/lib/dpackage, you've actually got all the installed ones you already have on your system there, as well as the MD5 stumps that got installed earlier. So you can tell what other packages do. It can be interesting when you're trying to figure out what's going on. Okay, maintainer frameworks. I love to hate them. Basically, most of you will not need to use anything else apart from DevHelper. Personally, that's all I've ever needed. It's very easy to get talked into using something more complicated. CDBS, Yara are used by a fair bunch of people. Actually, not Yara. No one uses Yara. But CDBS is used by a bunch of other people. And what it's used for is it's a framework that you have that allows you to supposedly simplify patch management and the rules you have in your Debian package. What actually ends up happening in practice in most of the cases is that you're actually making your life harder by replicating your revision control system back in your Debian package again. So you're tracking patches inside your revision control system. You're using revision control, right? Yes? 2 minutes, okay. And I'm only halfway through. Okay, so realistically, Deb Helper will actually cover most of what you need. If you start maintaining absolutely humongous packages, maybe if you're maintaining the kernel, if you're maintaining Zorg, which I love to mention, you will probably need to use Helper tools just because it is a more complicated setup. If you're maintaining something like, you know, pants that I showed before, PF Locksum, you really do not need to go to the effort of using something so complex. It also makes the life of anyone else who wants to look at your package a lot harder. So, how to keep your sanity? There's three easy things to remember. First one, don't touch things from other packages. Packages get confused when you remove files from underneath them. You can sometimes do it, but really, you probably want to avoid it. If you want to configure a separate file, sorry, a separate package, I'd suggest that you look at devconf preceding rather than actually modify their configuration file underneath them. The second thing is be careful with libraries. It's really easy to stuff up the system in complicated ways when libraries are involved. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying actually look carefully at what you're doing and read the doc carefully. And the last thing is if you're going to be uploading your package to a an archive of some sort, whether it's the official Debian one or another one that you've created or someone else, be careful as to how packages actually interact with each other, because this is where most of the bugs will actually come from, or at least the massive breakage that you can expect. So there's a few tools I want to mention. First one, Build Essential, is not really a tool, but a collection of tools you can use. Build Essential is supposed to be installed on your own machine before you start building packages. It contains a whole bunch of things you'll need. Things like make and, sorry, it depends on things you need. So if you install that, you'll get make and that kind of thing that actually allows you to build things. DevScript has a bunch of tools that are quite useful. It's worth looking at. Alien is worth mentioning, though you shouldn't have to use it. It's good for converting packages from one type to another. If you have an RPM that you want to install on your Debian system, you can use supposedly Alien. In practice, it's probably not going to work. If you want to use Alien, it's in 99% of cases going to be because you need a binary bit of software that's provided for your expensive server that was provided by, you know, Dell or HP or whoever, and the RPM is not written cleanly enough that it will convert easily. But you can try anyway, but you will be eaten by a guru. DevSign is used to actually GPG sign your package, so you can check that you were the one that that uploaded it, or someone else can check that it was actually you. So some URLs to remember, maybe just ask me for these later if you need them. The new antenna guide you can get to from debian.org/devel. It contains what I've just explained, but in more detail and some more information. We've also got the Debian developers reference. Especially chapters 5 and 6 contain information on packages. If you want explanation actually makes sense, they've rewritten them in English rather than Nerd. Sorry? No, but in English. The Women Project rewrote in English. If you're a masochist, you can read the Debian policy. It's terrible. We're all shaking. Okay, so if that was all real easy, what can you do? Well, I kind of had to put that in there because I thought AJ was going to be in the room. So the NM queue is what we call the new maintainer queue. It's where you have to go to if you want to join Debian. You'll get asked wonderful questions like this. That's supposed to be scary. Does anyone know what it means? Don't worry, the people asking the questions don't know either. They've actually moved it now, so it's in the bonus section rather than the you have to answer this section. But I understand it was quite funny to read the answers. VNMQ is the process that people have to go through to get given Debian.org accounts. As a personal recommendation, this isn't what Debian says, but it's what I say. And no one here is involved in it, so I can talk. It looks like it's a mentoring thing, but it's also a test. So you're really being tested on what's happening rather than just having some sort of conversation with someone as to how to do things. You shouldn't forget that, because otherwise when it does get, let's say, marked or checked that you know the answers, you don't want to have a lot of, oh, I don't really know. Most of the thing in there is actually pretty obvious. You can figure it out quite easily by reading documentation, but it may take a while. What we recommend people do is start maintaining a couple of packages. Get someone to sponsor you. That means finding a Debian developer who can upload packages for you. And then once you have a few packages that are in the archive, start going through the process. Once you have shown that you can do things without breaking anything and not creating a huge mess, it will be a lot easier for you rather than someone who's just trying to show without really pushing anything forward that they can actually do the work. Do you have any questions before I get kicked out of here? Yes. If you want to become a Debian developer, you will need to have a GPG key signed by another developer, just so we can check that you actually do supposedly exist. When you become a Debian developer, we implant this chip in the back of your head that allows you to check perfectly any form of ID and know whether it's real or not. So that's how we do it. Yes. Do they all have configure and make files? Actually, we can talk about this later. One other thing I would mention is that if you want to go to the GPG key signing and you haven't generated your key yet, but you do want to become a Debian developer, I would come and see some of the developers in the room and try and get them to sign your key, apart from the key signing. It'll be harder for you to do it at a key signing if you haven't submitted your key already. You may be able to do it, but it will be harder. By asking now, you're safe because there's a bunch of us in the room. Yes, that's it. Okay? Okay? Great. All right.
After the break, we'll continue with the Pascal show.